Okay, today I think is a major lesson in life for all of us. So as we go through this story, I want you to see if you can find what's relevant for us today, because I think it's one of the major points we'll find in the New Testament. All right, this is John 5 in the life of Christ. This is outside of Nicodemus. This is the first time that we get into John, because John didn't have a lot of the things that Jesus did, but this one he thought was important. And ironically, he's the only one that has this story. So he included. So, Leroy, start with John 5, verse 1.
Just one?
See, I'll just go till I tell you to stop.
Okay. Sometimes later, Jesus went up to Jerusalem for a feast of the Jews. One.
Keep going.
Okay. Now there was in Jerusalem, near the sheep gate, a pool, which in Aramaic is called Bethesda, and which is surrounded by five covered colonnades. Here a great number of disabled people used to lie, the blind, the lame, the paralyzed. One who had been there an invalid for 38 years, when Jesus saw him lying there and learned that he had been in that condition for a long time.
All right, stop there. That's good. Now, does any other version have anything else added in this little story so far?
Yes.
What do you have?
It says, and they waited for the water to move.
Okay. What's the clear word have?
Here many sick and handicapped people waited for the sudden and mysterious moving of the otherwise quiet water.
Okay, does anybody else have that in there or close to it?
It says an angel of the Lord went down.
Okay, what version do you have?
Right.
Okay, study Bible, yeah. Does yours have that in there?
No.
Okay, didn't think so. All right, now let's set the story in deal. Jesus most likely is by himself, because there is no mention of any disciples. So where the disciples were, we have no idea. Most likely this feast was the Pentecost feast, because in the next chapter, John 6, we're going to catch the Passover. So the Pentecost came before the Passover. So Jesus is going to the temple. Happens to be, we'll find out in just a few minutes, that it's on the Sabbath day. And here's all these sick people. Now, the pool of Bethesda, there's two meanings. Most commonly, we use house of mercy. Probably a more correct translation is house of olives. Don't know why they how they got peace out of olives, but since I don't like olives, so but and here was the story. The pool is 360 feet long, about 130 feet wide, and 75 feet deep. Since I don't swim, if I was sick, probably wouldn't be the first one to try to get into the pool, because otherwise I'd have another problem. But this was a big, big pool. And all around it, they had coverings for the people. And the people who were really, really sick would come there. And the story was, and that's why some versions have it, and other versions, more correct versions, do not have it, was that an angel, every once in a while, on a whim, would fly down, dip its wings in the pool, shake it up, and whoever was the first one to get into the pool would be healed. Now, most likely what happened, that there was an underground pool, water that fed this pool, and every once in a while, I guess the water, not knowing nature, being an expert camper, but not have got into all the nature things of pools and springs and all that. Most likely an underground spring will create bubbles or agitation, and this is most likely what happened. Thing I was kind of interested when I first heard this story is, can you imagine the people who believe this, what their picture of God was like? I mean, can you imagine that you really believed that God would dip down, stir up the pool, sit back, and watch all these sick, lame people scurrying, fighting, pushing, shoving to get into that pool knowing that one would be healed? I mean, who would we want to serve a God like that?
You know, what is worse, Ernie, is the people who read that translation, I think the King James has been, like, that they believe that actually happened. And what kind of a God do they think?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I mean, that's, I mean, you could make some examples of it, but that just gets sicker and sicker, so no sense in doing that. But I mean,
in here it says the people believed this.
Yeah.
But let's say it happened to the people.
But, you know, I don't know what we tell. Do we ever tell this story to kindergartners? You know, that would look good on flannograph. Angel flying down. See? But can you imagine a picture of God that these people had? So Jesus comes along, and of all these people, and sometimes we're told there's hundreds and as many as 1,000 people there. And they would lay around all day and all night, and people would bring them food. And, you know, because they didn't know how many times this was going to happen. And so here's a man that had been sick for 38 years. And so Jesus, walking along on the Sabbath by himself, there at the temple, for some reason, he sees this man. Okay, pick up.
When Jesus saw him lying there and learned that he had been in this condition for a long time, he asked him, "Do you want to get well?"
All right, let's stop there. So here's Jesus, all the sick people. Here's a guy that we've been told has been sick, paralytic for 38 years. And Jesus stops and says, "Would you like to be healed? What's your version say?
Do you want to get well?
Do you want to get well? Anybody else?
Do you wish to get well?
Do you wish to get well?
Would you like to be healed?
Pardon?
Would you like to be healed?
Okay, all right. Now, on the outset, is that kind of a dumb question? Hello. Why would he ask this question?
To get his attention, I guess.
Okay. What else?
See if he believed, I guess. In a way, I am.
Well, that's kind of interesting because we're going to read his answer.
I'm suspicious that he asked that question loud enough that everybody around there could hear him. And here he is, the guy that is totally unable to be healed whatsoever with that pool of water.
Okay. Could be. Why would he ask that? Pardon?
This is a simple question. Would you like to be healed? How long? He's been there a while.
38 years.
We're pretty lost. Never thought he was going to get in the pool. Pretty much lost all hope. I'm never going to get in there.
Okay.
Uh-huh. You really want to be healed? If you would, you would ask. Why are you waiting on this one? You ask to be healed instead of waiting on an angel to come and do it.
Okay.
That's the man the angel comes from.
Okay. Do you think this is a rhetorical question?
This is somehow I see this related to the woman at the well.
Okay, in what way?
Well, the water of life that he needs is not going to come from that pool.
Okay.
And the water of life that that woman needed is not going to come from that well.
Okay. Okay. In selling, I teach a technique that is a very principled of selling. If I make a statement of fact that could be or could not be true, you could or could not agree. But if you make the statement of fact for me, what does that make that statement for you?
True.
Absolutely true. If I say it, could have an argument. But if you state it, statement of fact. You get the idea of what I'm saying? If I say, I think every home should have a security system, you can argue that all day long. But if I ask Roger, do you see or what is your thinking about a home having a security system? And if he says, well, I think a security system for a home is important or good, do you see the difference? Because now he stated it. I didn't state it. I think Jesus asked him very deliberately, do you want to get healed? Because it was important for the man to have a reply. And by the way, did he give a real positive reply?
No.
Absolutely not. So here's Jesus. He has all of these people. You can imagine the sadness. They were blind people, sick people, paralyzed people, dying people. He's on the outer fringes, and of all of them, he sees him. And he says, excuse me, would you like to be healed?
You'd think he would say, well, yes.
Nope.
Sir, the invalid replied, I have no one to help me into the pool when the water is stirred. While I'm trying to get in, someone else goes down ahead of me. Jesus.
Okay, stop there. Did he answer the question? Well, kinda.
Yes, he revealed that he had a desire to
yeah.
be healed.
Yeah.
But part is, this is a question related to the gospel. I want to be healed, but it's impossible.
Impossible. Absolutely impossible.
Yeah, and here they've added. So there's no use. I'm ready to give up.
Yeah. Where is this guy's faith?
In the pool.
That's exactly right. His only hope of healing lies feet away. And for 38 years, every time in his mind, an angel dipped down. He didn't have a chance. And what do you think his outlook in life was the next time the angel dipped down?
He wasn't going to get there then.
Wasn't going to get there. Anyway, he was a goner. Now, what a perfect time for Jesus to give a very nice lecture. Why didn't he say, now I'm going to do something wonderful for you, but first of all, I would like to go through a few theological things to get your thinking straight. Straight. Why not?
That didn't relate to him getting well.
Okay. Why else? Wouldn't it have been a good time to pull out those diagrams of the 2300-day prophecy?
He could have got given them in 457 B.C. That was already passed.
That's right. Could have given him a nice lecture. Could have pointed out, you idiot, don't you know that story is just a bunch of bull? Well, let's see what he did.
Well, Jesus said to him, get up, pick up your mat and walk.
Okay, let's stop there. Would you like to be healed? Well, yes, I would, but every time that angel stirs up the water, I have no friends, nobody wants to help me. I've been laying here for 38 years, and I'll probably be here another 38 years if I live that long. No lecture. And he says what? What did he say first?
Did Jesus say?
Yep.
Get up. Pick up your mat and walk.
And what did the guy do?
He did it
once. The man was cured.
Yeah. In the original, very emphatically. Jack in the box. Why?
Well, if he had been lying there, and somebody just told him, pick up your mat and walk, I doubt that he would probably have even made any kind of a effort. But there's something that happened to that man that caused the nerves in his body to start tingling and to move into something, to make him know that something had happened and caused him to get up.
Okay. Now, why didn't he ponder it and think it through? First of all, which do you think in his mind, if he'd have thought it through rationally, he had a better chance of being healed? Getting into the pool or some stranger walking along asking a dumb question, hey, by the way, would you like to be healed? Well, just get up, take up your mat and walk. Which one would be the most logical? Been there 38 years. He certainly thought the pool was going to do something. Maybe he thought everybody before him would die.
But apparently somebody's been healed, the first one in.
Well, that's another discussion. If it's mental, and you're in the water, and you think the water can heal, how many times does that change what's happened to you? See? He says it once. Jumped up. Got up. Picked up his bed. Then what?
So they asked him.
Okay, pick up where you were when Jesus said to him.
Verse 9.
I went too far that. At once the man was cured. He picked up his mat and he walked. The day on which this took place was a Sabbath. And so the Jews said to the man who had been healed, it is the Sabbath. The law forbids you to carry your mat. But he replied, well, the man who made me well said to me, pick up your mat and walk.
Okay. Did he know who the man was?
I don't think so.
Did the man introduce himself to him? Why didn't he say, I want you to know who I am. I am the Son of Man. I am the Messiah. I have the power. So, I want you to get up, take up your bed, and walk, and get out of here.
Well, the same reason that they're all sitting around the pool waiting for it to stir. Put down meaning. Oh, he let's go to him. We'll wait for him.
Did the man care if he was the Messiah? Do you think he would have believed him if he had said he was the Messiah? No. He had one thing in mind. Can I walk or not? And so he takes up. Doesn't even ask the guy's name. And he takes off. Then he runs into the nice religious leaders of the church. And he says, remember me? 38 years? Look at me. And what do these nice religious people say?
They were thrilled at the blessing that man received.
Yes, they were. They said, hallelujah. Come to the temple and share your experience. Nah, they whipped out their little laws and they said, you sinner. You're carrying your mat, your bed, your clothing on the Sabbath. Now remember, the Jews, one of the big arguments among the Jews on the Sabbath day was, do you wear your false teeth or not on the Sabbath?
Putting them in was important.
Where did you read that, Ernie?
Barclay.
Because they considered it work to put it in.
Carrying burdens. See, they had it defined on exactly how much weight you could deal. So in the Talmud, one of their arguments when they were writing is, well, what we do with these teeth? So you can imagine what they met with a guy who was paralyzed for 38 years, dancing, jumping, hollering, screaming, carrying his deal, and it wasn't even sundown. Read on.
So they asked him, who is this fellow who told you to pick up and walk?
Now, do you think they knew who it was? Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Okay.
The man who was healed had no idea who it was. But Jesus had slipped away into the crowd that was there.
Okay.
Well, later, Jesus found him at the temple and said to him, see, you're well again. Stop sinning, or something worse may happen to you. The man went away and told the Jews that it was Jesus who had made him well.
Okay. Why this dialogue?
Jesus never really introduced himself. How did he know it was Jesus?
Must have found out in that dialogue at the temple.
Well, there were probably others who knew who Christ was also.
Yeah. You mean he might have been sharing? People told him, well, don't you know who that was? Okay.
I would like to think that at that very moment when he stood up, that he would think, maybe perhaps this was the Messiah.
Someone said to the Jews when asked, I have no idea.
I don't know who he is.
Have no idea.
Didn't care. He would know intuitively that there is something miraculous about this person. Okay. Could it be the Messiah?
Yeah, I'm sure there was some thinking. I mean, but the first thing that happened to him, he was overcome with joy.
Yes.
First thing he did, overcome with joy. Then he came back. Okay. Now. Nice story. What's interesting was all the people were at the temple to see God. The healthy people were there to worship God. The sick people were waiting for God or His representative to stir up a pool so that they could be healed, one of them. And they're all focused on the temple, and here's the Creator of the universe walking among them. Nobody knew Him. Nobody paid any attention to Him. Every one of those were a candidate, but yet He picked one that was out on the outer edge, one that had no hope, and one who had been there for 38 years and had no reason for any hope. Now my question today, which is always a question, what does this say today to us? Very well put.
There were a lot of other people around that pool that wanted to be well.
Okay.
And I selected one.
Okay.
And left the others.
Don't know.
Yeah, you imagine the people around there would have said, "Hey, how about me? Come over this way." You know, I mean, there's...
See, we don't know. Did they? Didn't they? The Bible tells us that God will never give us any more than we can bear.
Also, the temptations and challenges that we meet in life are not really to see if we're true to God. It's to help us to strengthen our faith.
Okay.
To help us know, you know, He's with me. He's there.
I find this statement fascinating. Behold, you have become well. Do not sin anymore. Well, we're sinners. So when it says do not sin anymore, what does that mean?
Okay, in the Greek, that's a continual lifestyle sinning. So that's saying, do not, the same thing He said to the woman caught in adultery.
Right.
Don't go and sin no more. What that is a continual life of continual sin.
Well, and to me, that sinning no more may be realize who God is.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not in the wet, it's not in the water, it's not in finding your affection through acceptance through some man in prostitution. It's like you have to realize, what does that mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What He's saying is change your life.
Yeah.
Just don't think. No, let's look at kids, you know, because we all can relate to those little turkeys. Kid gets in trouble, and we get him out of trouble or her, and then what happens? Do they say, "Oh my, thank you, I'll never do this again"? Or what do they do? They say, "Wow, I've survived this one. Probably do it again for me." See? That's what Jesus was saying. You met me, took care of it, now make that life change.
But that implied that he was in that condition because of sin.
That's what he thought. That's what he thought. Could have been. He could have been.
Yeah, I know that was the Jewish kind of orientation.
Yeah.
Anything that happened was either from God, whether good or bad.
Okay. There's lots of lessons, but there's a main one that I think... Oops. Well, that clock's 5 minutes fast. Okay. The first one I think is very, very interesting is Jesus did not introduce Himself, did not introduce His cause, did not try to make points with the man. He took care of his need. What does that say about our witnessing?
We can got it backwards.
Lots of churches have it backwards. Denominations have it backwards because we're compelled to say, here's something nice, and by the way, this is who I am and what I represent, and here's a few million tracts that I would like you to read.
This I keep going back to this statement of, can't you see who I am? Because that made no sense whatsoever. Later on, he tells that. He picked a man that was totally unable to help himself.
Mm-hmm.
He had hope, but he was totally unable to do it. And I think that was a lesson to us today, that as long as we think that we can trug along. But when we get to the point that we realize our total dependence on the Father, that's the only time that we are really secure then. And that's what Jesus said. He wasn't saying, well, you see who I am, because who I am is nothing. I have to depend on the Father.
Yeah. No sermon, no lecture, took care of his lesson. Now, here's what I got out of it that I think is the most important. Jesus came along and asked a question. Do you want your problem solved? The man said, like most of us, man, nothing's going right for me. He solves the problem. And what do we do?
Create a problem.
We argue with the solution. I can't get up. Are you sure I can get up?
What happens if I fall?
What happens if I get up and I fall back down? Yeah. That's the lesson. God comes along. He takes the worst case scenario he can find. And very often that worst case scenario is us. And he says, would you like to get out of your problem? And he gives us the solution. And then we want to keep going back to the original problem. Can't get up, can't carry my mat, fall down, I'll look foolish. Can you get me a wheelchair first? The man had no more basis. In fact, he had less basis than we have. He says, do you want to be well? No way in the world, he says. Get up. Take up your mat. And he did exactly what the answer he had been looking for 38 years. There was something within him that he popped up, took it, and went on. And what I found myself doing is saying, well, I really don't think that was the answer I'm looking for. I want you to think about your life and look back, and has God given you answers? And then you sit there and figure out all the reasons you can't do the answer He's already given you? Religious leaders, all they could look at was the criticism. the man didn't even know who it was. So Jesus come along and asked a question. He got a response. And the man jumped up, even though it looked impossible. But when we put our trust and our faith, no matter what questions we have, into the hand of God, as that man did, then all things are possible. And then don't look for your church, your relatives, your family, your friends to concur and encourage you on any of this. Because if God's giving you the answer, then that's all you need. Any comments?
I think this reveals again the compassion that God had for this man. And it seems like a restatement of God when he saw the children of Israel in captivity. You're held captive. I want to set you free. Mm-hmm. And we read earlier in our study, some weeks back there in Luke 4, the Isaiah statement, I've come to release those that are held captive.
Absolutely. We're going to see a little bit later, Jesus walking through a crowd, people bumping him, pushing him, shoving him, and everything. And one woman figured out, if I can just touch his robe. And when she did, who touched me? Christ is walking among us. We're the ones that don't listen. We're the ones that question. We're the ones that don't have faith. When he walks to our life and he says, do you have a problem? And then he gives the answer. What more is there to discuss? Father in heaven, sometimes we're all like the paralytic. We're set and we're looking for a miracle, a big sign to get us out of the mess that we're in. And you come along gently, unknown perhaps to us, and simply say, my child, would you like to get out of this mess? And we respond, and you say, this, my child, is what you should do. And then sometimes we say, you just don't understand, or whatever reason. Help each one of us to get up, take our mat, and walk in your answer. What a God you are. Thank you for loving us. Thank you for taking care of us as your children. Help us to grow day by day and understand that all you've done is to keep so we could have a relation with you. For this we're thankful in the name of Jesus. Amen.